Those two girls.
Hello.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Let me put my video on here. Hi.
Hi.
Oh my God. It's Nikki Webster.
Hello, you queen of queens. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for getting up early and chatting with us.
Oh, that's all right. Nothing like an early morning.
Nikki, I'm actually wearing a dressing gown. If you are wondering what this is, it is what you think it is.
Oh, I love that. It's very chic.
Well, some mornings when we get out of bed at 3:45 a.m., I just don't have the strength to reach for an actual outfit, so I just do this. What have you done? What have you done with the kids this morning?
They're just getting up, getting ready for school.
Amazing.
And dressing them. And, yeah.
Good.
All the fun stuff.
They're on their own, unsupervised. We love it.
No, they're not after our own heart.
Yeah. How the hell have you been?
Yeah, not too bad, actually. I mean, I think this whole year, 2020, has been a crazy year for everyone for all different sorts of reasons. But, personally, it's been quite a good year. Professionally, it's been quite hard because we've had to, stop our studios, our dance studios that we've been running for 12 years and then all of a sudden go online. So it's a whole new world to learn technology, to learn how to Zoom, how to connect with students. And we're just very grateful that we've been able to reopen and having the kids back in their creative space.
I mean, it's such a beautiful story, really. Like, it really is such a fairy tale story that the iconic Nikki Webster ends up opening dance studios for other children. You know, sometimes, you know, people who have been in similar situations to you, they end up just doing something completely unrelated to what they became known for. And I kind of love that you've stayed true to what those passions were, even in the early years for you. And now you're passing that on to the new generation. It gives me the warm and fuzzies, Nikki. It really does.
Oh, thank you. I mean, performing has been, you know, my life. It's my journey and it's all I kind of knew. It's what I got into when I was very, very young at 5. I did my first professional pantomime with Bert Newton and Jo Beth Taylor. And since then, since that first moment of being backstage to being on stage, I just remember going, this is where I feel at home. I've been lucky enough to have a very successful career in it, but it's where I feel most comfortable. It's what I love to do. I love to work with crew and cast and just be involved in that sense of family. So it's all I've kind of known, and opening the dance studio was something I thought maybe I'd do later in life, but it kind of just felt right when I turned 21. It was my brother and I, and he's also very he's got a Bachelor of Musical Art, a musical theatre from WAPA. And we looked at each other and went, oh, do we open our studios and compete against each other, or do we bring our strengths together and open one place and one hub? And it's kind of the best decision we've ever made. And it's just so inspiring to see what incredible talent we have in this country and how, just amazing they are and trying to create opportunities for them while providing a place that they feel safe to sing and dance and be silly. That's our goal.
Well, you certainly had the ultimate opportunity. I mean, we've got to speak about the elephant in the room, and that is that 15th of September 2020 is the 20th anniversary of your starring role in the opening ceremony of the Sydney Olympics. How does that make you feel, A, that it's 2 decades, and B, the sliding doors moment that would have been if you hadn't been the kid who got that role? Because you only found out at the last minute, didn't you?
Yeah, so I guess I feel pretty old considering, it's 20 years on.
I mean, you're 33.
Well, it's still a long time. Yeah. I remember watching Kathy light the cauldron I was standing outside in one of the little boxes, and I was looking at the cauldron as she was lighting it, and I was thinking, where will I be in 4 years, 8 years, 10, and trying to do each Olympics, where will I be? And never did I think that by the 20th year I'd be lucky enough to have 2 incredible kids. So it was always a dream of mine to be a mum, but I didn't think I'd actually, didn't know when it had happened. So I'm pretty stoked that I get to share the 20th anniversary with my kids and with them understanding what the Olympics is, like, especially my little girl. She's watched it. She's been embracing it. She's learning about the Australian culture, the Aboriginal culture through it. So that's been really nice that she's at a great age to explain the whole, storyline of the opening ceremony to her. But yeah, I guess if I didn't have it, I can't see that my career path would have been different. I still wanted to release music. I still wanted to make albums. I still wanted to travel and tour, and I still wanted to open a dance studio. It probably just would have been a lot slower, but I still would have been doing musical theatre and fulfilling my passions. So yes, the Olympics gave me a platform to enhance it, but it didn't change who I was, or it didn't change my path. It just kind of, I guess, made it a little bit faster.
Nikki, for people listening who, everybody knows who you are, of course, but some people may not know the road to you being selected as the hero girl for that opening ceremony, because the story is quite unusual. Can you tell us a little bit about what your parents knew about it, what you were told, and how long the audition process was for you?
So the audition to be Hero Girl was pretty epic, and I've always kind of thought if reality TV or Instagram or Facebook was around, it would have just blown up even more. But it was about a six-month audition process from our first open call, hundreds of girls there, and then we didn't hear anything for a long time. And from my understanding, they were searching around Australia for this girl and what she represented. So then I thought, oh, well, someone else has got it. We didn't hear anything. And then a couple of, months later, we got a next round call. And from that point, it was just a process of elimination. Like every few days, every week, there was a couple of auditions, a couple of different, processes that we went through, dancing, singing. Of course, they took us out to the stadium and, harnessed us, every girl up, and put us up. They didn't take us up too high. They took us, pretty much just off the ground or just above head height. And some girls were scared. Some girls were like, oh, okay. And David Atkins always tells the story, who was the director, who he lifted me up and I went, hey, is this as high as we're going today? And I think from that time he knew that this is who he wanted to be, the hero girl. But they kind of kept us in the dark until about 2 weeks before the opening, where they really let us know who was going to be the hero girl.
Well, I mean, and that's just it, I suppose. People, you really were very established in musical theatre as a kid, even before the opening ceremony, weren't you? Like you actually had Lisa's dream role as Brigitta in the Sound of Music
yes.
production.
Yeah.
Lise, do you just want to just extrapolate that information?
I have no words for you, because that movie, Nikki, is the movie of my childhood. You know, I think my sister and I can quote every single line in that movie, every single song we know by heart. So I can't even imagine being on stage as one of the Von Trapp kids. I mean, what a thrill.
It was incredible with Lisa McCune and John Walters and Bert Newton. But also on opening night of The Sound of Music, I got to meet the real Brigitta. So that kind of was like ice.
What was that like?
Oh, it was incredible. She came to watch the show and watch me perform, and it was pretty awesome. And I've still got that photo, and I still remember it, because I was a huge fan of the musical and the movie. Yeah.
Nikki, I think I wonder, when you find fame when you're so young, because you were yes, you had success in musical theatre, but overnight across the world, you're on newspapers, your face is on telly, reruns, and what were you, 12 or 13?
13, yeah.
13. I mean, how hard is it to grow up when everyone remembers you as a baby?
Yeah, it was interesting. That was something I didn't expect growing up in the public eye, that people would expect me to be like in a time capsule and forget that I grew up. So that was an interesting process to deal with, because as a girl, you're going through hormones, you're going through puberty, and you're going through this journey of, okay, well, I've finished school now, what do I do, and who do I become, and who am I as a girl, let alone a woman, and am I making the right decisions, the wrong decisions? And you do that personally, but to do it on a public scale was definitely a different process, but I didn't know any different. It was just I had to kind of work out who I was. You know, was I going to get lost in what people thought I was going to be? Was I going to get lost in who I thought I needed to be accepted? And so that's why I moved overseas for a little bit to LA and just started writing music, which I'd never done, and just tried to find myself through music and through writing stories. So, growing up in the public eye is I guess, challenging at times, but then again, growing up in life is challenging. So you just kind of have to take the ups and the downs and not live with regrets. And that's kind of what I've always done, is just tried to stay true to who I am and, you know, my family values.
Would you want it for your own kids?
I definitely wouldn't turn them away from it. I had so many incredible experiences. I loved what I did. I mean, what young girl gets to travel the world and perform and see the world through music and dance and make a girl's clothing range that sells out at Kmart? Like,
that's right.
What young girl doesn't want to do that? You know, it was a dream come true. So I definitely wouldn't deter them or turn them away. However, I would make sure that they understood how hard it is and put the hard work in to get there. It's not something that you just get given. It's, you got to work hard for it. And if it's something they loved, why not? It's given me everything that they have. So, yeah, definitely I wouldn't turn them away.
But you're not full dance mum like Abby Lee.
Well, you've got to ask my daughter that. She might say I am, but
well,
I'm the worst.
On that note, let's talk about Abby Lee. This is, of course, the American hit show Dance Mums, which is an absolute phenomenon of a show. Nikki, we heard rumours that you were possibly launching the Australian version of Dance Mums, the show. Is that true?
Yeah, that was definitely in the plan. It was obviously going to be our version, not the American version, but it was definitely the brand that we were going to bring to this country to, I guess, give a platform for young dancers and have dancers from all around Australia be involved. However, then coronavirus hit and that changes things for everyone. It's, you know, and at the moment it's not a priority just because of everything that's going on in the world. So, but my passion is to find, I guess, the right path for dancers to have a career and stay in this country and not have to move overseas, because, you know, I hate when all my kids get older and they're like, oh, I'm going to go on a cruise ship or I'm going to teach overseas. You know, I'm like, why can't we create an entertainment hub for them here? We have incredible talent. We have, you know, a great theatres and stages and places for them to perform. So just trying to create those opportunities to keep performers in this country.
I think that would be such a fresh format, Nikki, and I really hope you keep chasing that, because Sarah and I often talk about, you know, Australian TV, it's often the same shows on repeat, the formats that work and that networks keep just on the turntable, right?
Yeah.
But I love this idea of an Aussie Dance Mums led by you. And I know I just get the sense from, you know, chatting to you this morning that it would be wholesome and it wouldn't be necessarily drama filled. And I think
Abby Lee is a nasty piece of work. I can't watch that show with my daughters because so nasty. That's a show for adults. Whereas if Dance Mums led by Nikki Webster, that's a masked singer experience for the
whole
family.
Family, Nikki, you've got to do this. You've got to do this for us. I'm so sick of the other shows.
Yeah, and I think it's more about a mentorship, you know. Being a child star in this country, it would be a matter of, I guess, allowing them to I guess, learn from what I've been through and how I could help them and support them if they were going to be, you know, super famous and have this career. And it'd come from a mentorship. So,
Had a lot of interest from the big networks?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been hugely successful. But then, as I said, the you know, we was all systems go, and then the pandemic hit, and at the moment it's just on the back burner. So, you know, well, hopefully we'll turn a corner. But at the moment, I think the main priority is just making sure everyone's healthy and safe and we can keep our businesses going as best we can.
I think I know what the theme song should be.
Definitely not Strawberry Kids.
Yes! Nikki, one of our producers, his name's Aaron. He is, how old's Aaron?
23, 24.
Now,
oh, so young.
So young. And he's an absolute tech whiz. And he's not the type of person that you would think.
He doesn't gush over anything.
He doesn't gush over a single thing. But this man is obsessed with Strawberry Kisses. Like, it is his favourite song in history.
It was released in 2001, wasn't it? Is that right?
Yeah.
And
yes,
so,
yes,
as
correct.
He would have been six, I suppose, five or six when it came out. Aww. So that would have been just his little anthem. And even now, as a grown-ass man, when that song comes on, you've never seen someone go off as
much. Do you not like it anymore? Are you sick of it? When we sort of brought it up, you sort of recoiled in your seat there.
No, I love Strawberry Kisses. I love the anthem. I love the fact that it, as you said, you know, it attracts different people and memories come up, whether it's, you know, them at, you know, out at a club and they're drunk and they're taking the piss out of me singing it, or, you know, there's kids singing it and or parents have passed it on, or even kids in my studio who have found the song and discovered it and love it. It seems to be like a timeless kind of just bubblegum pop song. So I love it and I love singing it. It's more so I'm like, come on, if I'm going to do a new show, there's got to be a new theme song. We might throw some reference to Strawberries in there, but sure I'll be 100% singing Strawberry Kisses at this rate.
Yeah, I think Strawberry Kisses is going to have continual generational resurgences like Daryl Braithwaite's horses.
Well, that is a pretty incredible song, so I'm okay to be compared to that. But he needs to do a remix of it or something. I love to hear when people kind of come up with their own version of it. So tell him that he's got
a chance.
You know
what? Can you just make our day, make his day, just as a side note, and just be like, hey, Azzy, sending you Strawberry Kisses. Just say that. And we'll
okay.
Send it
all right. Hey, Azzy, I'm sending you Strawberry Kisses.
Yeah. Hey, Nikki, I just want to ask you, not to put things on a downer, but you mentioned before when people might be drunk in a club and taking the piss out of you. I'm interested to know if, you know, what level of tall poppy syndrome you've experienced over your career, because I remember you being on Dancing with the Stars a long time mm-hmm. ago now. I think it was the second season. And, mm-hmm. you know, people were having a go at you then because they were saying, well, that's an unfair advantage. She's already an established dancer. Then, of course, when you turned 18, you did the iconic FHM cover and people were like, oh, God, why would she go and do that? Have you experienced that level of, I won't say vitriol, or perhaps you have experienced that level from people? And why do you think that happens when you're perfect?
Oh, I don't know if I'm perfect, but I think not everybody's going to love what you do. And that's something that you have to kind of grow a thick shell about when you're in this industry. You're not doing it to please everyone. You're doing it because it's part of your journey or part of your career path. Doing Dancing with the Stars, I think it was just a moment for Todd McKinney to become, you know, really popular as a main judge, and he took that path. I mean, the season before they had Beck Hewitt, who was a dancer as well. We used to dance together growing up at different competitions. So, but it was just a moment for him, and he made a career out of being the nasty judge. So, you know, it kind of worked in his favor. And then doing FHM was a matter of, I guess, being a young girl. It wasn't a nude in any sense. It was very classy. And from my understanding, I felt like I was in control of the pictures. And it was creative and it was a little bit different. It was that matter of going, I'm now a little bit older. I need, maybe it's a chance for people to see me like that. It wasn't to, I guess, turn my back on people that had supported me. And it wasn't to go, okay, now I'm this new crazy person. It was more a matter of just that, okay, well, now I'm 18. This is, you know, this could be a part of who I am, you know. It was certainly what I felt classy and respectful and something that, you know, my dad wouldn't, you know, chuck me out of the house for. So I did try and keep all of that in my mind. But I think I guess I was never really criticized by the public that I kind of felt. I always had a lot of support from the public. It was more from a media perspective. And that was hard to deal with. Like I'd go and do an interview and I think, oh, yeah, that'd be a nice interview. We had great banter and it felt really, you know, productive and supportive. And then I'd open the paper and it would just be completely different to what I envisaged this article to be about. And it was about, you know, that I was too sweet or I was media trained or, you know, or that I guess everybody at certain times throughout a career are looking for an artist to have a downfall or something that they can have a headline for. And I think the media struggled because I didn't do drugs and I didn't go out and drink and get crazy and legless, and, you know. And so they struggled to find the fact that I was just, you know, a girl working hard and loving what I was doing. And they thought it was fake or I don't really know what they thought, but it was hard to kind of read things and go, that's not who I am. Like I'm just, I try and be honest. I'm positive. Yes, we all have crap days, but also my job is to be a performer. So my job is to be an entertainer. So my world problems don't need to go on to you. So Yeah, it was a tough time, but do I regret it? And do I think that maybe I shouldn't have had a career in this country? No, I loved what I did and what I achieved, and that was just the bad part that came with it, was people's judgment. But as I said, I don't do things to please everyone. I do it because I think it's right for me.
Hmm. Yeah, I reckon it's part of that whole growing up, but people wanting to keep you a little girl forever, because that's when, don't they say, people, when they come to fame, the age they are when they come to fame is how people remember them. So
I mean, it's kind of like Bindi Irwin, right? Like we love, Sarah in particular adores Bindi Irwin, but so many people are like, oh, she's so saccharine sweet and she's meaty trained, all the things you just said. Mm. You know, she's never gone down, Bindi, she's never gone down that path where people can go, aha, there's something wrong with you.
But then
you're,
it's almost
partying,
like you're damned if you do, damned
Absolutely.
If you don't. Because then you look at Miley Cyrus, right? Similar, child star, wholesome, Hannah Montana, singing, dancing, and the world just watched and waited for her to go off the rails, and then they pounced. Then you've got Bindi Irwin, who has always had a real sense of self, support team protecting her. Has done, I don't think she's done anything wrong in the media, but yet then she's slammed for being too wholesome, too sweet, too.
Did your parents protect you fiercely, the way Sarah just said? Did you really have a support system?
Oh, 100%. My parents are my, you know, my backbone. They've always supported me. And I think it just comes from family values. You can't create or pretend to be someone. It comes from the way you were brought up before you were famous or exposed. I guess Bindi Irwin grew up being, you know, exposed to the media, so I guess her journey's a little different to mine. But when you're put into the limelight, it's a matter of you either leave behind, you know, your dinner table talks with your parents, where it's like, okay, you've got to get a job and you've got to put dinner on the table every night, and it's meat and three veg. And that's how I grew up, two working parents, and my dad would go to work early so he could get home and take me to dance. And if he was 5 minutes late, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to be late, you know, like the typical kid. And my parents just did everything they could. They when I found dance and singing, they said, well, that's what you do. Like, you can't give up. You can't miss it. It's, if we're going to invest in it, then you commit to it. And that kind of instilled a lot of really good values. I mean, I missed, you know, multiple birthday parties as a kid, but I went to dance and I had a dance family, and that's what I really loved. So I can't just throw that away and then become someone completely different. I had to stay true to myself. And if that meant that the media couldn't find their headline or couldn't grab it, or my career didn't become as big as it could have been in this country because of that, that's just what it is. But at least when I put my head on the pillow, I know who I am. And now, being a mum, I'm very grateful that I stayed true to who I was, because I don't want my kid Googling my name and finding crazy things that I did just to try and get a headline. I like the fact that whenever she's going to, you know, Google my name, she's going to find, you know, the career that I had and the fact that I stayed in this country, and I'm a very proud Aussie, and the things that I did to try and I guess have a career and make music and have a job. I mean, what we do is the job. It's a passion, but it's also a job, and you've got to be able to provide from it and not just, you know, do it and not make any money out of it.
How are you going to celebrate the 20-year anniversary? Are you going to do anything?
I'm not sure what I'm going to do. We'll probably watch it. I only watched it a few months ago with my daughter, because she just came up to me one day and said, okay, I'd love to watch it. She'd seen me on YouTube flying, and she'd seen Under Southern Skies, but she hadn't actually seen the whole opening ceremony. So that was really lovely to sit with her. And I think I talked too much. She kept saying, be quiet, Mum. I was like, I did. And then I did this. And that's when this person walked on. She's like, Mum, I just want to watch it. So I think we'll watch it together as a family. I think for my whole family, it's got a lot of positive memories. I mean, I forget the fact that not only did it change my life, but it changed my parents' and my brother's life. You know, he had to go back to school being, you know, he was quite well known in his school as being the singer of the school. You know, he got all the musicals and he sang and he was very, very well known. And then he came back, you know, after the Olympics, and he was Nikki Webster's brother. And then I released Strawberry Kisses, and then he was the Strawberry Kisses singer's brother. So, I forget that, you know, all that he went through as well because of that one night. So I think we'll just celebrate it. We'll be very grateful for where we are in our lives and maybe just have a nice family dinner. I certainly won't be going out too crazy, I guess, in this environment anyway, but we're just, you know, stay at home and really connect and have some fun. I also connected with my childminder through Facebook, who looked after me during the opening ceremony a few weeks ago. So I'm sure we'll be messaging each other, and we just keep reminiscing on little moments that we did backstage and funny little things that we did before I went on. And so that's been really nice. And it's just lovely to be, I guess, remembered from everybody that was a part of the opening ceremony. Not only was the hero girl, it wasn't only about the hero girl, it was about everybody else that made the night. So it's so nice to connect with people that were the volunteers or worked backstage or were involved in this process to make this incredible production. So I'm very grateful to connect with anybody that had any little kind of inkling or part of making the night what it was.
I mean, what are some of those backstage memories? I mean, as we said, you were with Kathy Freeman, Kylie Minogue.
And a childminder. I didn't even consider that. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So I had a full-time childminder. So I used to get dropped off to her and she'd be with me the whole time. So, you know, anytime I couldn't get anything or I was frustrated or I was happy, I shared it with her. You know, she got me ready. We got dressed. She'd take me to each segment. Every time I'd come off from the center stage to the side VOMs or to the little tunnels, she'd be waiting there for me. She pretty much looked after me the entire time. And then she had to ring. My parents thought they were going to pick me up that night and we were going to catch the train home because we didn't live far from the stadium. Just catch the train home after the show. Okay, we were naive. And then she had to ring and say, no, they need her for the press conference. And my mum's like, what? They're like, you know, the press conference with Kathy Freeman and Olivia Newton-John and John Farnham. My mum's like, okay. And so she was with me through that whole time, that whole journey. So I remember coming down from the nature segment, which was with all the flowers, beautiful music, and I got to fly again. And I came down and they unclipped me and I ran to her just before going to my next segment and I had tears in my eyes. And she goes, what's the matter? I'm like, I'm never going to fly again. And she's like, Nikki, suck it up. You've got the rest of the show to go. And then I didn't realize she was saying to me the other day that she was actually sobbing inside after that moment. And she was trying to hold herself together while telling me what to do. So just funny little things like that. I think everybody had such a huge part of the opening ceremony. There were so many people involved in each segment. And really, I only walked in at a very late stage. People have been working on this production for years and years. You know, I remember coming to the rehearsals and David Atkins was laying down on the ground in his office in the same clothes he was in the night before. And I was like, huh, you didn't go home? And he was just like, it's the passion people had to make this the best opening ceremony, which they did, ever was pretty incredible to be involved in and just immersed in such amazing talent. So there are lots of fun stories. I got to hang out with the Aboriginal tribes and just saw how they kind of mother and family the babies of their clan. And they taught me a lot about their culture. Jakapura, I spent a lot of time with. He taught me how to do the bird call. And he was very frightened to go up at the end in eternity. He didn't like heights at all. And that was my time to encourage him to get up there. And he had times to encourage me to be okay. And it's weird, even though it's 20 years on, I feel like it's yesterday. I didn't forget those beautiful moments. And there wasn't one bad moment I had during that process. It was all really positive and everyone was just so grateful to be there and be given this opportunity.
Wow, I could listen to you on it. And I actually love that by the sounds of it, some of your strongest memories don't necessarily involve the big celebrities. You know, it's almost all the peripheral performers and the behind the scenes that says so much about you. Were you as tall as Kylie Minogue?
Slightly taller. We did have a competition. I think she was wearing heels, so I had jelly sandals on, so it doesn't count.
Oh, the jelly sandals.
Oh, God, I miss them.
They were
iconic. I mean,
they'd
make your feet sweat so much in them, you'd be slipping and sliding by the end of the day. But, I mean, the ones with the glitter in them and the slight platform.
Yeah, that's the ones I had.
Yeah, I feel you, girl. I mean, I wore them to school discos.
So much fun.
I'd like a pair right now. Can they bring those out while we're talking all things nostalgia? Jelly sandals for adults again, please.
Oh, I think they could definitely make a comeback. Right.
Definitely.
Well, we have to let you get back to your kids. You're probably doing the school run this morning, right?
You got it. The normal mum breakfast and dressed and out to school.
Wow.
it's I love that kind of stuff, and just trying to, you know, on the way to school, just have that connection before your daughter goes to school all day, and just, you know, try and instill, you know, her to have the best day. It's really fun. And I also love pickup. That's my favorite time, when I get to pick her up and she's happy and she's laughing with her friends, and she's the last one out of the school gate because we're not allowed in the school gates anymore. Yeah. And she comes out and she's got her bag open and, you know, she's just chatting away. And I just love to stand there and watch that and go, okay, great. She had an awesome day, you know, and that kind of makes anything that I'm going through go away, because that smile on her face that she's had friends and connected with friends and has a cheeky story to tell me she thinks is funny is the best part of my day, that's for sure.
And then you say, get in the car, because I've been missing your strawberry kisses.
No, that's what she does to embarrass me at the shops. Oh. She'll just go, hey, Nikki Webster, if I'm not paying attention, and she'll sing the song. It's very funny.
How old is she?
She's 6 and a half, and she's super.
Oh, yeah, you're in for it. If she's pulling those pranks now at 6. Oh, look, you've been an absolute joy to speak to, Nikki. We can just hear that you're a real empath and a very sensible kind of woman. And congratulations on the longevity in the industry and going out on your own, because that's tough thing in the best of times, let alone in the pandemic times. And may the force of Zoom dance class calls be with you until this is over.
And let's follow up with you.
I really hope we never have to do Zoom dance classes again. It was epic.
Let's follow up with you if Dance Mums Australia comes to the fore. Let's do that, because I'm so I'm so invested already.
I love it. I love it. And maybe we'll do a web series if not. You never know.
Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks,
Nikki.
Thanks, girls. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.